Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes, we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have a very special guest for you today. We have somebody who is a senior cyber recon analyst. She is on the OSINT Curious Advisory Board. She's an OSINT team lead for Operation Safe Escape. She's also a volunteer with the Innocent Lives Foundation. She is a maritime security and OSINT enthusiast. We have Ray Baker, also known as Wondersmith Ray. How are you doing, Ray?
Hey, how are you doing?
Thanks for being here. This is going to be a whole lot of fun to talk to you. This is the second time that you've been on the Layer 8 Podcast, the first time you came on and told us some stories about puppy scams, which were so much fun to hear about. Did the puppy scams actually get all solved, or do those still happen?
They were not solved yet. I believe I was one of the first few guests you had, if I remember correctly, and it was very fun. I'm glad to be in the first few. The puppy scam, yes, Layla, my white whale, it has not been solved yet. I do look into it from time to time and keep notes. So you might hear something about that.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. And another area that you've somewhat recently dug deep into, and I would probably say you're the foremost authority on the topic, is about maritime OSINT. How did you get interested in that?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that I'm the foremost expert. I don't really feel like I am. I think maybe I'm just the loudest. Yeah, I kind of fell into it, actually. I was looking at stuff that I randomly see online, and you know, I write blogs on things that I want to learn more about, and that's how I kind of learn about them. It forces me to be able to teach it to someone else through a blog, and then I absorb the information. And I saw some things about maritime, and I was like, that's pretty cool. I'd like to learn more about that. So I wrote a blog on it. And this was probably 2 years ago now. And it got a lot of attention. And I was very surprised because I just thought I was, you know, writing for myself and just putting it out there. And since then, I've kind of fallen into this role, which is fine because I love it, of like looking at ships and how they move and who they interact with and, you know, where they're going. So I spend an awful lot of time in the maritime OSINT space.
And what kinds of ships do you really get into with the OSINT? Is this like the container ships? Is this cruise lines? Is this just small boats? And why does this interest you?
Well, it depends on what kind of investigation I'm doing, really. Something like yachts or personal vessels would be used for more like personnel tracking, like if you're human targeting, let's say. If you're trying to find a specific person on a specific boat where they said they were versus where they actually were, we could look at yachts, things like that, fishing vessels. Container ships, obviously, they are a huge part of the supply chain. So that's important just for the amount of stuff that they bring to us and other countries. But also, people can transport arms and illegal things on cargo ships, including people. So I look at them from that aspect. And then I like tracking things like oil transfers and other illegal things like that. So I'll watch, you know, Russia, China, how they're moving ships. Just out of my own curiosity, I kind of watch all these and monitor them. Yeah. I mean, luckily, the sea is kind of it's a free-for-all, so there's plenty of stuff going on. It's not very, I want to say, highly regulated. Like, a lot of the stuff goes on there, and I don't think people know that there's that much, like, illicit activity going on in the sea.
You are also going to be speaking at the Layer 8 conference coming up soon. What is going to be your presentation there?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one, actually. It is about the Ever Given, the ship that I'm sure everyone has heard of now that got stuck in the Suez Canal. And I'm talking about how that affected the supply chain and how we can use OSINT to potentially predict things like that, or like how the choke points around the world could cause an issue and how we might be able to determine that ahead of time using OSINT, which is very topical because the Ever Given just went back through the Suez Canal the other day, last week, I think.
It must have been pretty uneventful.
It didn't get stuck this time.
They learned their lesson from the first time.
Yeah, I'm sure that because they put people on there, they have canal pilots. So they don't drive their own ship through there. They have pilots hop on the ship and they pilot it through. So they were probably very scared as they were going back through.
And what types of tools do you like to use? Are there specific maritime OSINT tools that you like to use, or are they the same types of tools that you use for all types of OSINT investigations?
There are some specific maritime tools. The problem with a lot of the maritime tools is you can only go so far until you hit a paywall. So like I use marine traffic. I love marine traffic. You can only search for kind of the current route that a ship is taking, like where they are right now. For historical tracks, if you wanted to see where it's been, who it's met with, things of that nature, which would be important if you're trying to track meetings or if they transferred something from one ship to another, which ports they've been to, you would need to pay for that. So kind of all those services work the same. They only give you so much and then you hit a paywall. But there are plenty of things you can find just through Google. You could track the people who are on the ships. You know, they're taking videos of their travels. If they see something out in the ocean, they'll take a picture of it. Twitter, I use Twitter a whole lot because you have people around the world who are either ship spotters, their entire hobby is just going out and taking pictures of ships and then putting them online. Or you have journalists or other OSINT analysts who are out there tracking ships in their area and uploading that to Twitter for me to look at.
And this sounds like it might be similar to the same way that people track airplanes and for the same reasons. Is it very similar in that way? Are they similar tools and similar reasons?
It's very similar. And actually, sometimes they cross over. If you're into tracking military ships or military planes, specifically ships in my case, if they don't turn their satellite on, you don't know where they are. But if they have a plane that lands on them and that plane has their transmitter on, then you now know the ship is there. So you can kind of use both to cue the other one.
And you also recently spoke at DEF CON. What was that about?
I did. I spoke at Recon Village and it was my first time. It was very exciting. I wrote about human trafficking. And I kind of told a story about a woman who was, I guess, picked up and coerced into a trafficking situation. And then I unraveled it through OSINT, like we're trying to find her. It's a scenario, fake scenario. So I walked through how you could use the clues, in quotes, that she left along the way to kind of figure out where she is now and rescue her.
And this presentation is also available on YouTube. The title was Using OSINT to Aid in Human Trafficking and Smuggling Cases. Some of the things that you had in that presentation were pretty interesting, including little things like being able to look in someone's glasses, in their sunglasses, in a photo. Can you talk a little bit more about some of those techniques that you used?
Yeah, that scenario is interesting. Again, all faked for this purpose. But so I took a woman, she had glasses on. It was supposed to be the last photo that she had posted to her, I believe it was Instagram account. So we're trying to figure out where she's at. And if you zoom in on her glasses, you can see a reflection of a casino. And if you flip the picture, you can then see the name of the casino. And then you can either look that up or reverse image search the picture, and you can figure out where she was standing based on the angle of the picture. But what was interesting is that although it was a fake scenario, it wasn't really completely faked because that has happened. People have been tracked down by reflections in their eyes in videos and pictures. In that presentation, I talk about a case where somebody did that. They've tracked their like a bus stop, I believe, or a train stop in the woman's eyes, and they knew where she got off, and then they looked at her apartment and things. They could figure out what level she was on in the videos that she put up, because I guess she was an influencer, and they tracked her off the bus or train and to her apartment and ended up assaulting her. So like, that stuff does happen, and it's crazy.
And another technique that you talked about in that presentation is about using EXIF data, even though quite often when people put images and files on social media, the EXIF data gets stripped, but you talked about some situations where that might not happen. Can you explain those a little bit?
EXIF data is really interesting and fun when you can actually find it. If you're working with social media, like you said, a lot of times that gets stripped out. The platforms themselves just remove it. The situation that I set up was she had put the picture up online, so it went straight to a website. So it didn't go through social media, so none of that was stripped off. So you could open the picture in an EXIF data viewer and see, you know, what camera took the picture. Sometimes you can get GPS locations, you can get the lens, all sorts of information, depending on the picture and the camera. You can get various points of data to then pivot from.
So Ray, you're affiliated with OSINT Curious. You've done competitions with Trace Labs. How did you get started in OSINT? What was your beginning with all of this?
I feel like that's a trick question because it involves you. So I got started in OSINT probably 2.5 years ago now. I was actually, before this, I was a graphic designer, graphic design manager, completely different field, obviously. And I decided I wanted to do something more technical. So I started to go back to school for security and risk analysis. And I didn't really know, like most people going into a tech field, like what part of cybersecurity I wanted to go in. And I had met you online, and you gave me free tickets to Layer 8. Because I was a student, and I went to Layer 8 and I played in a Trace Labs event on a whim, just played in that. And I was hooked as soon as I played that. I've always been like a huge true crime fan, and I've said this a million times, I'm sure. If anybody's listened to me before, they've heard me talk about true crime. But I could never be a cop. I'm not active enough to be honest. But that was like the closest I could get to being like a real detective or something, like solving a crime or finding all this like secret information about someone. And I loved it, and I just wanted more of it. And so I went back from there, and I just started blogging, like I said before, just trying to learn as much as I could by blogging, because with limited time between school and full-time work, it knocked out two birds with one stone. I could learn and also put out content at the same time. So people would get to know who I was, because I said, like, if I'm going back to school, I want to make the money that I'm spending worth it at like my mid 30s. I wasn't going to waste the time. So I just went like full bore into it.
So wait, your first experience with OSINT was at the Layer 8 conference and with the Trace Labs OSINT Capture the Flag competition?
Yes, 100%. I fully attribute that to you, I swear.
I definitely cannot take credit for that. This is all you. The only thing I did was put on a conference, and you came and you did all the work. And it's just amazing how far that you have come, because I always thought that you were already interested in OSINT and doing things when you came to that conference and when you got involved in that competition.
I had no idea what OSINT was before I went there.
And now here you are, like one of the world leaders in OSINT with all the things that you're doing. This is just amazing.
World, that's a stretch, I think. I mean, I live in this weird in between where like, I feel like I have not been in the community and my job for long enough to be considered an expert, but then everybody tells me I'm an expert. So like, it's this weird imposter syndrome, but also proud at the same time, that I'm sure other people deal with.
Yeah, I definitely think you should be proud. It's amazing the things that you've done, especially in such a short amount of time. That's just pretty amazing.
I think it was that year I made a New Year's resolution. I said, I'm going to do everything that scares me, and I'm going to stick to it, because I had never given a presentation ahead of switching jobs. I actually like I would actively miss school on days we had to present things because I did not want to present. I failed my public speaking class in college the first time because I just didn't go. I hated it. So I said like, I'm gonna make this worth it. I'm gonna do everything that terrifies me. And that's kind of like what I've been running with. It's been working out so well so far.
So you failed public speaking in
Yes.
college. You were
Oh
completely
God, yes.
scared of public speaking, and yet now you are a DEF CON speaker.
Yes. I mean, granted, it is easier when you're at home doing it on video, but I have presented. I think the biggest one I did was ShmooCon, and that was like a literal stage that you have to stand on, and that was kind of terrifying. But you know, you're terrified, then you get up there and you do it, and then it feels really good afterwards, and then you want to do it again, and then you're terrified again, and it's just like this cycle. And it never really gets easier, but you get used to like that high afterwards, so you keep doing it.
And at ShmooCon, is there still the threat of them throwing or shooting shmoo balls at you?
Yes, there is. I think it was a moose or something that year. Like a rubber moose or something, but I no nothing got thrown at me. I was also giving a it was like a victim human. It wasn't human trafficking, but they're not gonna throw things at me. I would hope. I played it.
Well, that's great that you survived that. What was your first presentation that you gave up on a stage in front of people?
It wasn't a stage. It was at Harrisburg University. I did a B-sides conference, and I did an OSINT 101 talk, and it was terrifying because it wasn't a stage in front where everyone's looking at you. They had it set up so everyone was around you, like in all directions. So you're in the middle of a circle, and there were big monitors like above me that I could see. It was yeah. I loved doing it, but it was very scary.
So you constantly had people behind you. That would
Yes.
be terrifying.
Yeah, because you don't know which way to like turn. Like, do you turn around for half of it? Do you keep walking in circles? It
Right.
was, yeah, it was weird.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. Okay. What else did
You're
you
still
do that?
taken aback. You didn't
Yeah,
know, did you? You had no
no.
idea. And
This
this
is
isn't
awesome.
I'm not trying to garner attention for Layer, right? This is a legitimate, but it's very true.
Oh no, if you want to garner attention for Layer 8, I'm all about that. That's great.
I will. I love the conference.
This is one of the best testimonials that I can probably put out there.
And
Come to Layer 8.
I've said it in other interviews. I say it all the time. I will give you credit. Because if not for those free tickets, I would not have probably I drove to Rhode Island. I think it was like
And
8 hours or something.
you brought a couple classmates with you too, I
Yep.
remember.
Yep.
Yeah, that was awesome. What else did you do that terrified you that year in addition to public speaking?
Oh, geez. Well, I think I switched careers at that point very soon after I went to Layer 8 because I actually played in Trace Labs against the people who ended up offering me a job. So like all of it culminates at Layer 8. It's very strange.
Yeah, and I think the team that won the Trace Labs competition at Layer 8 was the same team that won the OSINT Capture the Flag competition at DEF CON that year as well, showing, just how good they were at that.
I believe so. Yeah, and we came in second at that Trace Labs, my team. So it must have stood out, I guess, along with my blogs.
Yeah, yours was the Penn State team, is that right?
Yep.
Because you were the president of what was the club at Penn State?
The World Campus Tech Club.
Where you've had some pretty interesting speakers come there as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I actually tapped into Twitter for that and reached out to pretty much everyone. I'm pretty sure you spoke too, didn't you? You came.
Yes, I did once. It
Yeah.
was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we'd have speakers come and do like a Zoom, like an hour talk to the students of the tech club. And now
You
since then, a lot of people have actually like gotten into OSINT because they knew me from the tech club and then they watch my stuff on LinkedIn and they're like, "Hey, what's OSINT? Can you tell me a little bit about that?"
see, you're passing it along to others as well.
I hope so. I mean, that's what I try to do.
So you are also on the advisory board of OSINT Curious. If somebody's not familiar with OSINT Curious, who are they and what do they do?
We are a group that delivers OSINT content, free content to all of you. We put out videos and blogs, and when there were trainings live, we would do those too. Just kind of, we want to keep things free and open and just teach OSINT because we all love OSINT. We want people to get into it.
And do you have any specialties or areas that you focus on with OSINT Curious?
With OSINT, no, we kind of just, I do the marketing. That's pretty much my focus at the moment. I do the Twitter posts and stuff. And then, you know, when I have time, I write blogs and contribute to videos and kind of just back end stuff at the moment.
So after that first Trace Labs competition at Layer 8, you've competed in some others. And I think recently you won the competition. You won the black badge. Which competition was that?
That was the one at DEF CON that just took place. I had actually, I don't even know how many I've done. I've judged several, so I'm technically a senior judge, and I have participated in quite a few. Last time we took second place, this time we took first. So this is the only time I've won. I'm bowing out for now to let other people win. Not that I'm saying I will win them all, but I'm bowing out. But it was really fun. I got to work with a really great team. Joe Gray, Sin Windy, Chase Matheson. And it was overall really fun.
And what are those competitions like? What do you have to do? What type of information do they give you? And what do you have to give back?
So you get, they usually give you like four or five people that are missing, real missing people. And then you have to find things about them. You're trying to find them or things about them, like do they have a nose piercing? What's their mom's name? And all those are submitted as for points, varying levels of points. So if you find their potential last location, that's a high point submission. And then at the end, they total them all up, and then you either win or you don't. But you might find a missing person in the process, which is really the point. And they take all that information and they pass it to law enforcement after the competition.
And do you get to know if the person is actually found?
Not usually. So sometimes you'll know if you see a news story and you recognize the name, but just due to like the family and their privacy and stuff, we don't really ever know. But that's fine. I mean, the point is really giving them the information. It would be nice to know, obviously, but I understand why they can't. I have seen some found after the fact, whether good outcome or not. We do see it sometimes in the news later.
And would you describe those competitions as being beginner friendly? Do you think somebody who is just getting into OSINT should try out one of those competitions?
I definitely do. I usually suggest this for people trying to get into OSINT. It's a good beginner competition because, first of all, you get to work with a group. I mean, you don't have to. You can play by yourself. But if you work with a group, you learn how to work on an investigation with other people. And you come up with a method, like how you're going to store the information, how you're going to attack the investigation amongst yourselves. So that's good practice for, you know, on the job or whatever. And then just the OSINT part itself, learning how to pivot through various pieces of information. Like if you find a social media profile, do you look at their friends list? Do you find another profile that they have that is following themselves? Because a lot of times these people are kids. They're under 18 and they have 5, 6, 7 different Instagrams, and they're all just similarly named, but different enough that you wouldn't be able to just find it if you search for it. But if you look through their friends list, you can often find that they've liked their other profiles. So just kind of learning how to pivot through information is really good and easy to pick up while you're doing this type of competition. And there's the good, you know, OSINT for good aspect of it, is you're not just learning, you're doing something to help the community.
It's a real competition, finding real people with real data. So I'm a complete beginner at this. I've never done an OSINT competition. Can you coach me through it? What are the beginner tips that you would give me? Let's say This weekend, I'm going to be sitting down at a Trace Labs competition for the first time. What tips would you give me as soon as it starts at the beginning? What sorts of things should I be doing and thinking about as soon as I am given those names?
So ahead of time, before it starts, I would tell you to get with your team and figure out how you want to attack it. Like, are you going to use a Google Doc and that's how you're going to put all your information that you find? Because you don't want to submit the same things. If you're working with four other people and you're all submitting the same flags, you're going to drive your judge crazy. So having a plan for how to gather information, how to store it, how to discuss what you're finding, because sometimes you need to throw things out and have your teammates like give you feedback on it. So for instance, in our team, we had a Slack channel where we talked about what we were finding. We also had a Google Doc where we listed all the people and then all the stuff we found for those people. So if halfway through the game you switched the missing person you're looking for, you can just pick up where the other person left off and you're not resubmitting. Once the game starts, I would suggest reaching out to the judge because a lot of your points are dependent on the judge and how they interpret what you submit. Being friendly with him goes a long way. So like reach out, say hi, and introduce yourself and your team and kind of get along with your judge a little there. And then as you're playing, the strategy that I've always used, and not to say it's right, it's just kind of what I've done, is like we each pick a person. So in this last game, it was four missing people, and we had, or four or five, and we have four people on the team. So we each took one and we looked for things for like an hour or two or until someone got stuck, and then we switch and we all pick a different person, and then we kind of go with that. Joe is really good at digging into like dark web stuff and just kind of going deep diving into things. So we kind of let him do that, and then he's really good at talking with the judge and like making sure the submissions are right and they're being accepted. And like I'm personally, my method is to just kind of go at it. I don't really have too much of a plan. I know I got a lot of flack this week for saying, or last week for saying that I use Google Dorks, and a lot of people think that you need like all these tools to do these competitions or be good at OSINT, and I think that's kind of gatekeeping. I use a lot of Google Dorks. I mean, why open a tool and spend 40 minutes trying to figure out how to use the tool and how to get the stuff from it and interpret it? And a lot of the stuff you can just do through simple Google Dorks, like name of person plus the location or missing, and then you just kind of go through all the data and find out. Submit the low hanging fruit. Like, does she have earrings? Does she have glasses? Does the person have a tattoo? All those little things. And if you submit them, they add up. Yes, the big flags are good. It's good to have somebody like Joe who's working solely on those big point flags. And then the rest of us kind of going through all the social media profiles and pulling down what we can and digging through. So I hope I answered your question. That was very long-winded.
That was really great. And I love that you're suggesting to use the Google Dorks because I think a lot of times the tools that we use in OSINT are really just interfaces for Google Dorks, I think. I think
Yeah,
some of
I
them.
mean, there are some that I use daily in like work, but for this competition, I feel like it takes too much time to open all these tools and pull them up and pull information from them. And often the people that are playing in this are beginners, and I feel like when they feel that the only way to get into OSINT is to learn Python and learn all these tools, it is a barrier of entry. And that bothers me because honestly, even at work, a lot of my work is just Googling things and seeing what comes out.
And is that really your biggest tip to the competition is to just find as much information, whatever little information, like what are the typical types of flags? Like you mentioned, the person has an earring, the person has tattoos. Are those the typical flags? Are there lists of flags that they're looking for? Or is it more just you send them whatever information about this person that you can find and they assign points to those?
There is a list on their website of point values assigned to submissions. So like friends and family and how many points you get for those submissions. And then it gives you some ideas. I will go through, and obviously if I come across a tattoo or a piercing or somebody changes their hair color, I will submit those as I go. But I kind of break down my investigation by time. So like I will only look at something for like 10 minutes. And if it takes any longer than that to find something, I'll pivot to something else because you're timed. It's a competition. So you got to keep moving. And I don't want to get buried in a rabbit hole and be digging into something that leads to no points for an hour, because that's a lot of wasted time when you can pivot to somebody else and maybe submit their mother or their grandmother. But I'm not saying go through and submit every family member these people have, because there are some limits. Like, you want the information to kind of be useful. You want it to be something that the police might not have. But in the end, it is a competition and you want the points. So you kind of got to find what you can. And we won first, but we also won the most valuable OSINT award as well. Chase did an excellent job of like photoshopping and pulling together this investigation. And I obviously can't tell you like what it was, but generally we found a location that somebody had taken a picture, and in the background there was a little logo, and we determined where the building was and how far it was away from their school. And he put together like a nice little drawing package and sent that in, and that's kind of what won that award. So that was pretty impressive.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And when they give you the names, is it just names that they give you? Because once you start searching with names, how do you know that you're looking for the right person?
They will give you a missing person, like the flyer that they put out, like the police put out. They'll give you that, and it'll have their picture on it, and it'll have some identifying things like their eye color, their height, if they were last seen somewhere, and you kind of go off of that. You can't submit that stuff because the police already know that, but you can use that to then try and match photos up and heights and stuff like that.
And what is it like being on the other side of that, being one of the judges? What is it like receiving the information?
I did it, the last time I did it was a long time ago. I know they've overhauled the judging, so it's probably different than when I did it, but it was kind of an onslaught of information. And that's something to keep in mind when you're playing. Like, it's very easy to get upset that your judge isn't like going fast enough because you have all these submissions and you're just staring at them like, are they gonna go through? Like, what's going on? But on the other side, the judges sometimes are working with three, four, five teams. So they're having to like open your submissions, verify them, and then either accept them or reject them, and then move to somebody else. And they're trying to do that all at one time. And if you don't submit your stuff with like a good explanation and the link and like really lay it out so they don't have to do a lot of work, it takes a ton of time.
And that's where the value of having someone like Joe Gray on your team comes in, because it makes it very clear for the judge.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a senior judge. Joe's a senior judge. I think Sin Windy had judged before. So we kind of all knew what the back end was like. So it made it a little easier to turn in submissions because we knew what they were looking for.
So here's the question that we get a lot. And I think that you're a great person to answer this question as well. Somebody wants to get into the OSINT field. What are some of the areas that somebody could look to get a job in, and what are great ways that somebody can actually get started in the field?
So getting into the field, I know it seems very daunting because you read about OSINT and you see all these tools and you see all these people doing like very high level, like detailed, I mean, like very detailed investigations, journalists, and it's very intimidating, but it's not that hard to break in if you want to. Just find something that you like or someone who is doing something that you like, and you say like, I want to be like them, and then just kind of emulate them. You can pick a blog that you really like how they're doing it. And yes, it's copying, but not really. You're just trying to emulate what you like about them. And you can blog and you can teach yourself things. It gets your name out there. Definitely market yourself. I think a lot of that came for me because of my marketing design background. I spent so much time marketing through social media because that was part of my job that like that's just something I do. Like I know you have to put content out so often. I know you have to like attribute your name to things and like claim things and be on video. And like I know all those things are part of marketing. You're a brand, really. So you kind of have to focus on that aspect too. So it's like learning stuff and then also your personal brand. Because that's what jobs are going to be looking for. They're on Twitter. They're on LinkedIn. In the tech space, they're looking for you. They just need to see you. So do whatever you can to get out there and like interact with the community. I always made it a point to not take more than I gave back. So if I was ingesting all your blogs and all your videos and like sitting in and listening to all these conferences, like that's not really fair of me to do without putting something else back into the community. So that's kind of where the blogs and the conference talks and stuff came from. And yes, it's self-serving in a way because it is branding, but it's also giving back to maybe the next person who comes in line who wants to learn something. The other thing is, I think a barrier is people think, well, they've already written a blog on this, or they've already talked about this, or they already solved this problem, but like that doesn't really matter because your take on it is going to be completely different than my take on it. And it could be about the exact same topic, but you're going to write differently than I would, or you're going to say different things or come at it differently. So that is valuable to new people as well. And then as far as finding jobs, like I said, Twitter, LinkedIn, you can, there's so many aspects of OSINT from, you know, insurance and just fraud and like financial fraud and genealogy and the DoD space, commercial. You'd be surprised how many OSINT jobs are actually out there. And they call them different things. They might call it reconnaissance or, so you kind of have to get those keywords down to when you're searching and make sure those go in your resume because that's what they're going to be looking for. But yeah, just, I guess, market yourself. I hope that wasn't too much rambling. I got a lot of thoughts in my head.
You're also a volunteer with the Innocent Lives Foundation. What does the Innocent Lives Foundation mean to you and why are you affiliated with them?
I actually submitted an application a while ago and I just recently, within the last year, heard back from them and became a volunteer. You know, they work with stopping and preventing child exploitation by essentially tracking down the predators. And I don't know who wouldn't want to be part of that. I mean, yes, it's very hard for some people to stomach, and I understand that. But it's a really good cause. And all the people who volunteer and are part of it are great people. I've learned a lot from them so far, and I hope to keep learning from them. So it means a lot to be a part of that and having them think that I am good enough to be a part of that.
Thank you so much for doing this, Ray Baker. This has been a lot of fun. It's always great to have you at the Layer 8 conference and on the Layer 8 podcast.
Thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.